Okay, good morning. Yiddishkeit always stresses moderation, restraint, self-control. Drunkenness is something that's anathema in our tradition. Yiddishkeit abhors excess, loss of control, recklessness. And yet, there is this mitzvah, we'll ask together this morning if it indeed is a mitzvah, but there is this mitzvah to drink to excess on Purim, to get drunk on Purim. And we'll explore together this morning if indeed it is a mitzvah, and where does this mitzvah come from, and what is the mitzvah, in fact? Because again, it seems to fly in the face of everything that we believe in. Right? What is with this custom of getting drunk on Purim or drinking to excess on Purim? And we'll see together this morning how this custom would seem to shed light on some of the larger themes in Megillat Esther and themes of the holiday of Purim itself. So the first source here on the source sheets is the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchot Yom Tov, in Perek Vav, the Laws of Holidays, the sixth chapter there, defines the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov, rejoicing, being happy on the holidays, the mitzvah of V'samachta Bechagecha. And after recording that there is a mitzvah to drink wine on holidays, the Rambam writes that a person should be careful not to overdo it. And the Rambam writes here in source number one, Kishadam ochel v'shoteh v'sameach baregel, when a person eats and drinks and rejoices on the holiday, literally the pilgrimage festival, but you know the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov applies to Rosh Hashanah as well, as we've explained in the past. Lo yimashech bayayin uvischok uvekalut rosh. Person should not go overboard with wine and with silliness, frivolity. V'yomar, and say to himself, shekol mi sheyosif baze yarbe b'mitzvat simcha. Right? That all who increase wine and drinking and silliness increases simcha. Again, a person might say to themselves, the Rambam warns, that if there's a mitzvah to be happy and to drink, well, so if it's a mitzvah, let me do a bigger mitzvah and drink a lot and go overboard. No. That's not what it's about, writes the Rambam. Instead, he writes, "Shashichrut v'aschok harbei v'kalut rosh eina simcha." Drunkenness and silliness and frivolity—that's not called simcha. That's not called joy. Ela holelut v'sichlut. That's called debauchery. That's called foolishness. Right? That's not what it's about. V'lo nitzdavinu al haholelut v'hasichlut. We were not commanded to go overboard and to engage in debauchery, silliness, frivolity, foolishness. That's not what the mitzvah of Simchat Yom Tov is. Okay? Ella, rather, ala simcha sheyesh ba avodat yotzer hakol. Rather, what is the obligation? The obligation is to engage in joy that is about serving the creator of everything, serving Hashem, serving our creator. That's the joy that the Torah is talking about. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, in Dvarim Chavchet, where the Torah indicts the Jewish people for not properly serving Hashem with simcha and warns what that can lead to if you don't serve Hashem with the requisite joy. Tachat asher lo avadat et Hashem Elokecha b'simcha uvetuv leivav, merov kol. The Torah indicts the Jewish people for not serving Hashem through joy and gladness. From here you learn that you're supposed to serve Hashem with joy. You're supposed to worship God with joy, right? From the fact that we are criticized or indicted for not doing so. And it's not possible to serve God through silliness, frivolity, lightheadedness, and drunkenness, right? So the Rambam here defines what Simchat Yom Tov is. Don't think that it's drinking and getting drunk. Chas v'shalom, the mitzvah is to have some wine, but not go overboard. Okay. And yet, if you take a look here at source number two, the Gemara and Megillah on Daf Zayin seems to instruct one to drink on Purim. Amar Rava, Rava said, Michayev Inish libisume bipuria, one is obligated to libisume, which Rashi defines as lishtaker bayayin, to get drunk on wine. Libisume literally means to become fragrant. We'll see, it doesn't mean getting stinking drunk, but it means a little happy, a little fragrant. You find this term in a number of places in the Gemara. It could also be related to the fact that maybe once upon a time they drank spiced wine. But a person is supposed to become fragrant through drinking wine on Purim. Ad lo yada ben arur haman levaruch Mordechai, until he does not know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Now, what is Rava telling us here? What is the obligation? Right? How much does a person have to drink? Does it really mean there's an obligation to get drunk? To drink to the point of drunkenness? Until you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. In other words, you're so confused. You're so drunk. You confuse the villain of the story with the hero of the story. I mean, is that what the Gemara is telling us here? Is that what Rava means here? Okay. So how do you define this? And if you take a look at source number six, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. Rava says, Michayev, it's an obligation. And the Shulchan Aruch, in the laws of Purim, Rechaim Simen Tafresh Tzadihei writes, Chayev Inish Libisume Bepuri Ad Lo Yada Bein Orer Haman Levarach Mordechai. The Shulchan Aruch brings this Gemara down lahalacha, that one is obligated to drink on Purim until he does not know the difference between blessed is Mordechai, cursed is Haman. Okay? So the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch use this language of chovah, it's an obligation. But again, we'll have to define what that obligation is. You know, only in Israel does your five-year-old come home from Gan singing this passage. Chayavin ish libisume, libisume. A person's obligated to get drunk on Purim. Only in Israel do kids come home from school singing this. But again, what is that obligation, if indeed it is an obligation? So Tosfos, here in source number three on the Gemara, would seem to limit the obligation. In other words, a person doesn't have to get so drunk, just drunk enough that he forgets the words to this poem or song that appears in the Yerushalmi. Okay, take a look at Tosfos here in source number three. Tosfos writes, Birushalmi, in the Yerushalmi, it's recorded, Arura Zeresh Brucha Esther, Arurim Kol Harishayim Bruchim Kol Hayudim. He has to get drunk to the point where he confuses all of these things, perhaps alluding to a poem or a song. And that's how other Rishonim explain. It sounds an awful lot like the Shoshanat Yaakov, that song that we sing following the Megillah reading. And other Rishonim explain that, yes, a person need not get so drunk, just drunk enough to the point where they're forgetting some of these stanzas, to some of these lines, to either this poem or some other poem. Okay, the Rambam here, in source number four, the Rambam who, the Nesher HaGadol, the great eagle, was a philosopher, a rationalist, always stresses moderation, the Kav HaEmtza'i, the Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, the middle road, the middle path. So the Rambam, as you would imagine, does not accept this Gemara literally, that a person has to get drunk. The Rambam, again, who always stresses moderation, the Rambam who we began with, who said even on Yom Tov, when there's a mitzvah of simcha, don't overdo it. So the Rambam here, in source number four, in Hilchot Megillah, writes, where he's defining how to observe the Seudat Purim, the Purim meal, Ketzad chovat su'uda zo, what is the obligation of this meal? How do you observe this meal? Sheyochal basar, person should eat meat, v'itaken suda na'a, kifi asher timtza yado. He should make a nice, bechovedik, dignified meal according to his means. V'shorte yayin, and he should drink wine, ad she yishtaker v'iradem b'shichrut. Until he dozes off. Doesn't mean until he gets drunk. He gets a little, you know, a little happy. And then he dozes off. And that is how, according to the Rambam, you fulfill this obligation of not being able to distinguish between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Because if you're asleep, you can't distinguish between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman. You're asleep. You can't distinguish anything, right? So that's how the Rambam explains this obligation. And we'll see, the Ramah will bring down the Rambam. The Ramah would actually, as we'll see, brings down the Shitot of the Ramah and the Maharil and the Kolbo, which we'll look at in a moment. Okay, so you see the way Tosfot and the Rambam and others understand this obligation. It doesn't mean getting drunk to the point where a person loses his mind and confuses Haman with Mordechai. Either he forgets the words to a song, or he falls asleep. Other Rishonim explain, similar to Tosfos, but other Rishonim explain that he can't make the calculation, the gematria of Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Because in gematria, in Hebrew numerology, cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai are equal. They are equivalent, okay? So, you know, again, you could say, how drunk does a person have to be in order that he can no longer calculate that gematria? You know, for some people like myself who aren't very good at math, you don't have to get too drunk. You know, maybe after one or two glasses of wine already, you start making mistakes with your addition and subtraction and with this gematria. So, you see from the Rishonim, many take a moderate approach and explain that this obligation is not to get so drunk, just, you know, a little bit more than you would normally drink, to the point where either you forget words to this poem, or you can't calculate the gematria, or you fall asleep. Okay. The Kolbo here in source number 5, the Kolbo takes issue with the notion of getting drunk bichlal. Because as we began with, drunkenness is something that's abhorrent in our tradition. You know, again, Judaism always stresses moderation and self-control and restraint and abhors excess and loss of control and recklessness. Drunkenness is something that is antithetical to Yiddishkeit. So the Kolbo here writes in source number 5, V'chayav adam libisume bipuria. What does it mean that a person should drink on Purim? Lo sheyishtaker. Doesn't mean that he should get drunk, says the Kolbo. Sheashichrut asur gamur. Drunkenness is completely forbidden. Ve'ein lecha avera gdola mezo. And there is no greater sin than drunkenness. Shehu gorem, because it can cause legilui arayot, ushvichut damim, ulekama averot, zulatan. Drunkenness can lead to immodesty, arayos, adultery, sexual immorality, even murder. Here he's, you know, alluding to the way Chazal understand the Chet HaEgel and other things as well. Ulekama averot zulatan. Drunkenness can lead to all sorts of awful things. Right? I don't have to elaborate any further. Rather, he writes the following: Ach sheishte yoter milimudo maat. Rather, what a person should do on Purim and what the obligation is in the Gemara is that a person should just drink a little more than he is accustomed to. Kidei sheyirbal lismach, in order that he increase his joy. Just have, you know, an additional cup of wine. And this is key, what he writes next. Ulisameach evyonim, v'yinachem otam, v'yidaber al libam. He should rather make the poor people happy. That's what the mitzvah is. Instead of filling his belly with food and drink, he should make other people happy, make the poor happy, and comfort them and speak to their heart, Vizohi hasimcha hashlema. And that is the complete or the real, the true joy. Okay, rather than getting drunk on Purim, save the money on wine, and instead give out more matanot levyonim. And not just hand out matanot levyonim, but actually make those people who you are giving the handouts to, make them happy. That's what he writes. And this is similar to what the Rambam writes in Hilchot Yom Tov, in that same chapter, Perek Vav, that we began with. The Rambam writes there that that's real simcha. He asks, what is real simcha? Real simcha is making one's family happy on holidays. A person, he quotes the Gemara in Pesachim, that a person is obligated to l'sameach b'no b'nei beito, his children, the members of his household. Okay? That's called real simcha. Not eating, not fressing and drinking. The Rambam writes, someone who eats and drinks and thinks that that's real simcha, that's called simchat kreso. That's called filling his belly. Rather, real simcha is making other people happy. The widow, the orphan, the poor. That's what the Rambam writes. That's a true kiyum of simcha. Okay? Not just filling one's gut. And that's what the Sefer Kolbo writes here too. It's not about drunkenness. It's about sharing that simcha with others. And so based on the Rambam and the Kolbo and the Ma'aril, the Ramah here, in source number 6, after the Shulchan Aruch records that indeed it is an obligation to drink on Purim until one does not know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, the Rama writes, V'yesh omrim, there are those who say, De'ein tzarich lishtaker kol kach, you don't have to get so drunk, right? Ela sheishte yoter milimudo v'yashen. So here, you see, he would seem to synthesize the opinions of the Kolbo and the Rambam. He says, a person rather should drink a little more than he's accustomed to, and go to sleep, fall asleep. And once he's sleeping, yes, so he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, because he's asleep. And this next line is key. One person has a little bit more, one person has a little bit less, it's all good, so long as he directs his heart towards the heavens, as he has the right kavana. So long as he has the right kavanos, writes the Ramah here. Okay? In other words, so long as he makes a kiddush Hashem and not a chilul Hashem. We all, unfortunately, have seen examples of people making a chilul Hashem on Purim after having drunk too much. I need not elaborate. But we'll see in the Chai Adam, and this is something that many others record, there's a real concern if a person gets drunk on Purim, besides for the fact that they are going to act silly, they might do something, as the Kolbo says, they might end up sinning, doing something wrong, but even not, you know, we'll see in a few moments, the Chai Adam expresses a concern for benching. You know, a person might get so drunk they might forget to bench, or they might be laying down there on the floor and not be able to bench. Or what about davening, right? How can someone daven, if they haven't davened mincha before they begin their suda, how can they daven mincha or ma'ariv after the suda, right? So there's a real concern. So the Ramah stresses one person a little bit more, one person a little bit less, so long as their intentions are for the sake of heaven, that they have the right kavanos, that it's a kiddush Hashem and not a chilul Hashem. You know, some people, when it comes to other mitzvos, they're not so careful. But when it comes to drinking on Purim, all of a sudden they become the chazon ish of drinking on Purim. They're so machmir to get drunk on Purim. Other mitzvos, you know, they take liberties, but drinking on Purim, oh, all of a sudden they turn into the chazon ish of drinking on Purim. They have to have a big shir, have to make sure you fulfill the obligation according to all of the deos, all of the shitos, drink a lot, okay? But a person's intentions have to be for the sake of heaven. I remember a few years ago, when Purim fell out on Friday, as it does in Yerushalayim this year, and we were having a lot of guests for the Suda later, and my wife said, you know, maybe we don't have enough challah. So she went in the morning to the makolet to buy some challah. And on her way to the makolet, some yeshiva bachur, who was already drunk, okay, he threw water at my wife. You know, he sees a married woman walking. Imagine, he threw water at my wife. And he said a woman's not allowed to come out of her home, something like that, something to that effect. And he tossed water at her. Is that what Purim is about? Is that what this idea of drinking on Purim is really about? You know, had I seen it, I would have slapped the Purim right out of him. Okay, it's a good thing I wasn't there. But that's not what drinking on Purim is about. So what is it about? We'll have to ask. Okay. Now, what's fascinating and even shocking is that immediately following this statement of Rava, that one is obligated to drink on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, the Gemara continues the very next line with a wild story. A wild story. A story about Rabba and Rabbi Zeira. If you go back to source number 2, Rabba and Rabbi Zeira avdu sudat Purim b'hadei hadadei. The Gemara relates that Rabba and Rabbi Zeira, two Amoraim, two sages of the Talmud, they had the Purim Su'udah together. Ibasum, and they got drunk. They got drunk fulfilling this dictum, this obligation, according to Rava, to get drunk. Come Rabba, Shchatei l'Rabbi Zeira. The Gemara records that Rabba got up and literally shchatei, shechted, slaughtered Rabbi Zeira. That's what the Gemara says. He slaughtered him. He killed him. Now, there are others who explain it doesn't mean that he really killed him. Okay. The Meiri reads shchatei. Don't read it. He writes like he shechted or slaughtered him, but rather shchatei, shchita. He squeezed him. He squeezed him. Yeah. Maybe he choked him. Maybe he knocked him unconscious. Okay, the Marsha and others explain that what it means is he drank him under the table. He got him so drunk, he was unconscious. And the story continues, L'machar, the next day, Ba'irachmei v'achaye, Rabba davened for mercy, and Rabbi Zeira was revived. Now, why did he wait till the next day? I don't know, maybe he was hungover. Yeah, there are those who explain that maybe it means he embarrassed him, because we know, according to Chazal, embarrassing someone in public is just like killing them, like shedding their blood. Yeah, that's another explanation. Again, the Mefarshei HaGemara have a hard time with this idea that he literally killed him. But Reb David, if he merely embarrassed him, so then how would he have to ask for mercy? And how do you understand the next line? He asked for mercy and he was revived. Unless you say he asked for mercy, not from Hashem. He didn't daven to Hashem, but he asked for mercy from Rabbi Zeira to forgive him. And then Vachaye, he revived him, meaning he had felt so bad for having insulted him that, you know, once he forgave him, oh, then he was revived. Okay. You know. Or maybe by apologizing, just like embarrassing someone is shedding their blood, maybe when he's no longer embarrassed and no longer feels badly about it because he apologized, so then he the one who was embarrassed, whose blood was shed, so to speak, he was revived. You could read that into the Gemara. But just a simple reading of the Gemara is he shechted him, okay, and then he prayed for mercy and he was revived, okay. But again, there are different interpretations. L'shana, the next year, Amarle, Rabbi says to his friend Rabbi Zeira, Neitemar v'navid sudat Purim b'hadei hadadei. Let's have the Purim Suda together again this year. Right? We had so much fun last year. Let's do it again. Amarle, but Rabbi Zeira says to him, No. I'm sorry. Lo b'chol shata v'shata mitrachesh nisa. We may not be so lucky this year. Not each and every moment do we benefit from a miracle. Does a miracle occur? In other words, we got off easy last year. We may not be so lucky this year, which again, Reb David, it makes the interpretation that he just embarrassed him a little bit more difficult, because then what's the concern? Why would you need a miracle? So in any case, it's this wild story that follows Rava's instructions to drink, right? Right after, immediately after Rava's instructions to drink, the Gemara offers this anecdote, this story. And according to some, this anecdote or incident serves as a warning not to get drunk. It serves as a cautionary tale. Look what can happen if you do get drunk. And for Rabbeinu Ephraim, as cited in the Bala Maor in source number 7, in the Maor HaKotan of Zechariah HaLevi, this story comes to tell you that the halacha is not like Rava, that there is no mitzvah to get drunk. V'haraya, look what can happen. The story of Rabba and Rabbi Zeira. So take a look here at source number 7. This is the Maor HaKatan, in his comments to the Rif. Amar Rabba, chayav inish libisume bipuria. Rabba says one is obligated to get drunk on Purim, chule, etc. Katav ha-Rabbeinu Ephraim zal. Rabbeinu Ephraim wrote, mehahu uvda, from this incident, meaning from the story that follows, dikam Rabba, shchate le Rabbi Zeira, when Rabba got up and slaughtered Rabbi Zeira, lishana, amarle, tanavid, chule, etc., 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 idache le memra de Rabba. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, it comes to push off the statement of Rabba. The Gemara records this incident not only as a warning or a cautionary tale, as some explain, but it comes to tell you that the halacha is not like Rabba. V'leit hilchet akivatei, and the halacha is not in accord with Rabba. V'lav shapir dami lemeved hachi, and it's not good one who does this, one who acts this way. Okay? So, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim here, as cited by the Bala Maor, this whole story, this whole incident, is to say we don't follow this halacha. There is no obligation. There is no mitzvah. The haraya, look what happened. The story of Rabba and Rabbi Zeira. Now, what's fascinating is, if you examine the girsa that Rabbeinu Ephraim had, the girsa that the Bala Maor had, who is the one who instructs you to get drunk on Purim? It's Rabba. And who's the one that the story is about? This cautionary tale? The one who gets drunk and kills his friend? It's Rabba. Now, in our girsa, the standard edition of the Gemara, our edition, it's Rava who instructs one to drink on Purim, and then it's Rabba who gets drunk and kills Rabbi Zeira, shechts Rabbi Zeira. Two different people. Now, sometimes the Gemara, you know, conflates Rabba with Rava, mixes up Rava with Rabba. But it's so fascinating that here the Bala Maor and Rabbeinu Ephraim, who tell you that this whole story is there to tell you the halacha is not to get drunk on Purim. Look what can happen. In their girsa, the edition of the Gemara that they had, the text that was in front of them, the version that they had, the same individual who tells you to get drunk on Purim is the same individual who then the Gemara relates got drunk and then slaughtered his friend, which only serves to underscore or amplify how dangerous drinking can be on Purim. It's so ironic that in their girsa, it's Rabba who says to get drunk and Rabba who gets drunk and kills his friend. It's so ironic. It only serves to underscore and amplify the point that this story is there to tell you that there is no mitzvah to get drunk on Purim. Now, by the way, I should mention, there are some who say the complete opposite, that the story is there as a support of Rava, to tell you how far one should go in getting drunk on Purim. But that, I think, is a little far-fetched. That's not very compelling. In other words, what they want to say is Rava comes along and says, oh, a person's obligated to drink on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, and look just how much one has to drink. Just look how far you have to go. And then the Gemara relates the story of Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira, how they had the Purim meal together, got drunk, and Rabbah got up and slaughtered Rabbi Zeira. Okay, so for some, this is a cautionary tale, a warning, don't go overboard. For others, it's to tell you that the halacha is not like Rava, there is no obligation to get drunk on Purim. And yet, for some, just the opposite. The Gemara there relates the story to tell you just how far you have to go. We'll come back in a few moments and analyze this story again through a mystical or Kabbalistic or Hasidic lens, but it's just absolutely fascinating. And based on what we've seen so far this morning, if getting drunk is so anathema or so antithetical to our tradition, if Judaism indeed abhors excess and loss of control and recklessness, and drunkenness is so dangerous, as we saw this morning, so why drink? Why is there even a notion to drink on Purim? Now, again, as we saw, many say that a person doesn't have to drink to the point of drunkenness. They should have a little bit more than they typically would, another glass of wine. But why even that? Why the drinking on Purim? What's the connection between drinking and Purim? Yes, you have a suggestion? Yeah, very good, very good. The entire miracle, the entire salvation of the Purim story comes about through drinking, through these feasts, through this series of banquets. The entire story is told through drinking. If you analyze the Megillah, without looking at the Mefarshim, you just analyze it as a piece of literature, right? A literary analysis. You subject the Megillah to a literary analysis. Wine and drinking is a major motif in the story. It carries the whole narrative. The whole story is told through these banquets, this series of banquets that they're having, and through the drunkenness. It's through the drunkenness, right, that, as you mentioned, Achashverosh, this pliable king, allows himself to be manipulated and influenced. First, at the beginning of the story, with the series of feasts that he makes at the beginning of the Megillah, it's through getting drunk that he allows himself to be influenced and manipulated to put his queen Vashti to death, to sentence her to death, which ultimately allows Esther to become queen, right? And then it's ultimately through the drunkenness and feasts and banquets that Haman is able to influence Achashverosh to get permission to kill the Jewish people throughout the kingdom. And then ultimately, the denouement of the story, Haman's plans ultimately are foiled again through a series of banquets that Esther makes this time and is able to plead with King Achashverosh and convince him to allow the Jewish people to defend themselves against their enemies. Right? And you know, Haman's plans come crashing down where and when? At one of those banquets. So that wine that keeps flowing allows Achashverosh to be influenced and manipulated and makes him even more pliable, makes this pliable king even more pliable. The entire story is told through drinking. And the Yeshua, the salvation, the miracle, comes about through the drinking, through the wine. And so therefore, according to the Abu Darham, and we'll see in a moment the Chayei Adam and many others, this idea, this notion of drinking on Purim, and again, as we saw so far, it doesn't mean to get so drunk. But this idea of drinking on Purim is related to the fact that the salvation is brought about through drinking. So take a look at source number 8. This is the Chayei Adam. He writes the following. Kevan shekol hanes haya al yidei yayin. Since the entire miracle takes place through wine, ki b'tchila nitarda vashti al yidei mishte uba Esther, as we said, it's through the wine that, you know, vashti is removed and Esther comes and fills her place. It takes place at these banquets. V'chein inyan Haman u'mapalato haya al yidei yayin. Haman, both in terms of his plot, right, and convincing the king to allow him, to grant him permission, give him all that power, give him his ring and give him all that power, that takes place during these banquets. That takes place while the king is a little drunk, or maybe a lot of drunk. And also his downfall, right? Mapalato haya al yedei yayin, right? Where does he pleads with Esther, Haman, and ultimately he ends up falling on top of her just as the king walks through the door. That takes place at this drunken banquet. Lachain. Therefore, chayvu chachamim lishtaker. Ulefachot lishtot yoter mehergelo. Therefore, our sages required one to drink, at least to drink more than he's accustomed to. Kidei liskor hanes hagadol. In order to remember the great miracle. So what the Chayei Adam and the Abu Darham and others suggest is that by drinking, and it's really drinking wine. Libisume, Rashi defines, as we mentioned, is lishtaker bayayin, to drink wine. It doesn't mean whiskey, doesn't mean vodka or other intoxicants. It means wine because that's a zecher for the nes. It's a remembrance for the miracle. That's what the Chayei Adam is saying here. Interesting. We'll talk in a moment about irrationality and how the drinking ultimately allows us to go beyond logic and reason. We'll visit that in a few moments. Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you. It's a good point. But what the Chayei Adam says here is that drinking wine ultimately is a zecher lanes. It invokes the miracle. It invokes the fact that the salvation comes about through the wine, through this series of banquets and feasts. Now, then the Chayei Adam continues and warns the Amnam, however, Hayodea ba'atzmo, if a person knows himself, sheyizalzel az b'mitzvah min ha-mitzvot, that he will be mizalzel, he will make little of one of the mitzvot, meaning he won't observe one of the mitzvot, min ha-mitzvot, b'netilat yadayim, whether it's talking about washing one's hands before the meal, u'birkat ha-mazon, or benching, saying grace after meals. Now, by the way, the halacha is that one, interestingly, is allowed to say Birkat HaMazon while drunk. So long as he can get the words out, you're allowed to say Birkat HaMazon while drunk. As we'll see in a moment, you're not allowed to daven while drunk. Davening requires that at least a person be able to stand before the king. He has to also be able to get the words out properly, but he has to be able to speak before the king. Imagine if you were invited to speak with a prime minister or a president. So, you know, you would not go to the bar beforehand. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe a person would want to loosen up a little bit, you know, take the edge off, as they say. But no, you'd want to make sure that your words come out properly. So too, when you're standing before the King of Kings, you have to be able to get the words out properly. You have to be able to stand before the king. And davening, praying while in a state of intoxication, is called a tfilat to'eva. It's called an abominable prayer. It's an abomination. It's something that is detestable, disgusting. So, but what the Chayei Adam is saying here, maybe a person gets so drunk that they'll forget to bench, or they'll be, you know, collapsed on the floor, passed out, and won't be able to say Birkat HaMazon. O shelayit pala mincha, o ma'ariv, o shenaheg kalut rosh. Or he won't daven mincha, he won't daven ma'ariv. Or he'll behave in a silly way, lightheadedness, frivolity. He'll make a fool of himself. Mutav shelo yishtaker. In that case, it's better that he not drink. Okay, the Chayei Adam says that a person has to know himself, and if he's not going to be able to pull himself together later to daven ma'ariv, you know, it's ma'ariv, as other posts can point out, there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah of Shema, of Kriyat Shema Shel Arvit. So there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. In addition to the rabbinic obligation to daven, there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah to to say the Shema, and the Chai Adam is concerned with other things as well, you know, Netilat Yadayim and Birkat HaMazon. So if the drinking is going to come, writes the Chai Adam, at the expense of any other mitzvah, well, then that's not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah at all, and a person should not do it. Mutav shelo yishtaker, better that he not drink if it's going to come at the expense of another mitzvah. V'chol ma'asav yu l'shem shamayim. And like we saw in the Ramah, the Chai Adam writes, and all of his actions should be for the sake of heaven. As the Rama writes, a person has to have the proper kavanot. Shechaven libo lashamayim. If a person is going to drink a little bit, surrounded by friends and family, and share divrei Torah, right? If he's going to be, it's one of my rabbis in high school expressed it, if he's going to be spewing words of Torah, okay. He's going to have a little bit to drink and spew forth words of Torah, wonderful. But if he's going to be spewing other things, as one of my rabbis in high school said, then he should not drink. And the Chai Adam says a person has to know himself. Okay? Now, beyond this idea of drinking wine in order to invoke the salvation which was brought about through wine, the miracle of Purim, which is brought about through wine, there is perhaps another element as well. And this is something that you brought up. That through drinking, and again, it need not be to excess, but through drinking, it allows us to get outside of our minds for a moment.
Oh.
Okay. Well, now we're getting philosophical here. It allows us to transcend those borders, those boundaries. Okay, to open the doors of perception. Okay, some suggest that's the idea of drinking on Purim, to sort of get beyond logic and reason in order to experience and to feel Hashem's hand guiding the Purim story, guiding Jewish history and guiding our lives, to see Hashem in our national lives and in our personal lives, because that ultimately is the lesson of Purim. I mean, what is Purim all about, right? So some explain that, you know, drinking on Purim allows us to escape from the boundaries of our intellect. And as human beings, we are bound by logic and reason. The whole year we perceive Jewish history and our own lives in a very narrow and limited way. We have tunnel vision. We have our blinders on. But on Purim, we reveal the hidden. We see Hashem pulling the strings behind the curtain. That is ultimately the message of Purim. The Megillah, Megillat Esther, the name of the scroll, can be understood to mean revealing the hidden. Megillah from Megale, Esther from Hester. In fact, the Gemara in Chulin asks, where is there a source in our Torah for Esther, right? Where is there a source in our Torah for Esther? And what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, Anochi Haster Astir, I will surely hide my face from you. A pasuk that speaks of Hester Panim, God seemingly hiding his face amidst suffering. And we know that the message of Purim is to see Hashem behind the scenes. He seems to be hiding in the book. It's one of the books of our Tanakh, yet it's the only book where the name of Hashem is absent. Hashem is hiding in the story. It's up to us to reveal him. Megillat Esther can be understood to mean revealing the hidden. Okay? There's a tradition that anytime the word the king is mentioned, Hamelech, it's a reference to the King of Kings. The king is there. God is there the whole time. He's just in hiding. It's up to us to search for him, to seek him out, to find him in the story, in the Purim story, in the story of our lives, our national lives and in our personal lives. Right? In fact, some will even write the Megillah. Some scribes will write the Megillah. It's called a Hamelech Megillah, where each column begins with the word Hamelech, the king, to allude to the fact that the king is not just King Achashverosh, the king is really the King of Kings who's pulling the strings behind the curtain of the story, on the stage that is Jewish history. And you know, while that's the subject of some debate among the poskim, whether that's the most mahudar way, or maybe it's not so proper to write each column beginning with the word Hamelech, it's a very common practice, again, for this very reason, because the king alludes to the King of Kings. So, if you go back to the Gemara there, and this wild story of how Rabba and Rabbi Zeira had the Purim Suda together, and they got drunk, and Rabba got up and slaughtered Rabbi Zeira. There is a way of interpreting the story, maybe a Kabbalistic or Hasidic way of interpreting the story along these lines, that ultimately the drinking is about getting beyond our intellect, getting beyond reason, because so many things are beyond human comprehension. So what did the Gemara say? If you go back here to source number 2, Rabba v'Rabbi Zeira avdu sudat Purim b'hadei hadadei. Ibasum. Rabba and Rabbi Zeira had the Purim meal together. They got drunk. Come Rabba shchatei l'Rabbi Zeira. Rabba got up and slaughtered Rabbi Zeira. Rabba, in Aramaic, even in Hebrew, means what? What does the word Rabba literally mean? Great, right? Rabba emunatecha, we say every morning. Great, big, expansive. Okay? What does Ze'er mean in Aramaic? Anyone know? Ze'er means small in Aramaic. Okay? Rabbi Zeira can be understood to mean small. So, one way of looking at this story through a Kabbalistic or Hasidic lens is that by getting drunk, the great comes, the Rabba, the great and expansiveness comes, the Mochen de Gadlut, in Kabbalistic and Hasidic terminology, the expansive way of looking at things comes and slaughters the Mochen de Katnut, the small way of looking at things, the limited consciousness. Expanded consciousness through drinking on Purim comes and slaughters the limited consciousness, the Mochen de Katnut. Right? Once a year, through drinking, not too much, we can access those depths. Right? We can open up those doors of perception. We can allow the expanded way of looking at things, expanded consciousness, the Mochen de Gadlut, to come and slaughter the Mochen de Katnut. As I mentioned before, the rest of the year we operate on Mochen de Katnut. We see things in a very narrow way, very limited way. As human beings, we're very limited. We have this tunnel vision. Yes, true, we believe that Hashem runs the world, and that He's involved in our lives, and that His hand is involved in history, right? History is His story, as some have pointed out, okay? But we don't always experience that. We don't always feel that. Okay? So one day a year, we drink a little bit in order to see the king in the story, in order to feel His hand guiding our lives, in order to see Him in our, as I said, our national lives and our personal lives, okay? And the drinking opens us up to that. And I think that's how we can understand the obligation to drink until you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Because at face value, that's very difficult. What does that mean? You have to get so drunk to the point where you confuse the villain with the hero? Maybe what it means is by drinking, right, you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, because when you're open to seeing Hashem's hand guiding your life and guiding Jewish history, when you experience that, when you feel that, it's not just something that's rational, that, yes, we believe, but you experience that and you feel that. So then there is no cursed is Haman or blessed is Mordechai. It all comes from Hashem. It's all good. In other words, then even even the lines between evil and good, not that they're blurred. There's always we always have to distinguish between good and evil. That's not what it means. But what it means is that you see that even the evil, even the Haman, that too comes from Hashem. So a person, as the Gemara says, has to drink until he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. He has to drink to the point where he sees and feels on a visceral level, in a real sense, that even the curse is also a blessing because it comes from Hashem. It's part of Hashem's plan. Okay, and again, you know, we believe that the rest of the year too, but we don't always feel that. We don't always experience that. And the drinking on Purim perhaps opens us up to experiencing that, to feeling that. That even the curse, even the Hamans in the world, it's all part of Hashem's plan. Just as the Mordechais are part of Hashem's plan too, just as the tzaddikim and the good people, it's also part of Hashem's plan, so too even the wicked Hamans of the world is part of God's plan. And the curse is just as much part of God's plan as the blessing. Okay, and that's what it means to drink to the point where you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. And the truth is, you don't have to drink a lot to get to that point. And you don't even have to drink anything. What does the Gemara say? Mechayev inish libesume bepuria. A person is obligated to get drunk on Purim. Some explain to get drunk on Purim itself. It doesn't say get drunk on wine. It doesn't say get drunk on whiskey. It says to get drunk on Purim. To get drunk on this idea of Purim. This notion of seeing or feeling or experiencing Hashem's hand guiding Jewish history, guiding our lives, our national lives, our personal lives. You can get so drunk on Purim without even touching a drop of alcohol. I've seen people so drunk on Purim without having taken a sip, without having had anything. They're drunk on the notion of Purim. They're drunk on the idea of Purim. They're drunk on seeing God and feeling God and experiencing God in their lives. And that's what it means to get drunk on Purim. There is, right, yes, there are midrashim that say in the future there will be no holidays except for Purim. In the future, there will be no books in Tanakh. All the other books in Tanakh will become null and void, will be batel, except for the scroll of Esther, Megillat Esther, because it has this eternal message of seeing Hashem's hand guiding history. It's ultimately a deep faith. Okay, it's about Hashem's hand guiding history, Hashem pulling the strings, the king that's hidden in the story, but it's about us searching him out, seeking him out in the Purim story and in the story of our lives, as I said, our national lives, our personal lives. It's about this deep faith, and the message is will always be relevant, even in the world to come, even in the Messianic age. This message is eternal, and that's how you can understand that medrash. But as I said, you know, the obligation is to drink on Purim, to get drunk on Purim itself. And one need not drink at all to feel that tremendous joy of seeing and feeling and experiencing Hashem's hand guiding Jewish history, guiding our lives, our national lives, our personal lives, okay? And so we should all merit to get drunk, not on alcohol, but get drunk on Purim, on this notion of Purim, on Purim itself. Okay. Have a great day. We'll see you all, Mirtz Hashem, next week.